Okay, thank you so very much. Just for the record, Mr. Polanis has recused himself from this hearing. And Mr. Neal will conduct this hearing. So at this time, the next voice that you will hear, sir, will be that of the Honorable Mr. David Neal.
Okay, Mr. Padilla, I'm looking at the list of people that are in the boardroom today on your behalf.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Padilla, would you please state your full name and ABC number for the record?
Eric Paul Padilla, DOC number 109103.
Thank you, sir. I'm aware of some information about your case and your incarceration. As I go through it, I'll occasionally ask if it sounds okay, but if you hear anything that doesn't sound correct, please let me know. And I will say that the packet we have is somewhat shy of information. The pre-sentence report is a little bit hard to follow, so I may have confused a few details. And if I state something you don't think is correct, let me know, please, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you're currently 54 years old, sir?
55,
okay. You were serving a life sentence for first-degree murder, which the sentence began August 1st, 1993. The offense actually occurred October 29th, 1993, and you were convicted by a jury for this charge. You were certified for this hearing on June 29th, 2018, and it's for whether parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. This is your first time in front of the board, so we don't have any issues there. The offense, I'm going to try to keep it as brief and as I possibly can, but currently, at the time all this happened, you were under investigation by ATF, and that's, I think, one of the reasons that the information that I put in there is a little bit hard to follow. But the basics that I got out of this is that they were investigating you for some possession and transfer of explosive devices. And on that one, during this whole process, you were federal court, you were found guilty of some charges and sentenced to 53 months in a federal facility. And I believe between that and then going to prison on this one, that term has all been expired. So we're only going to deal with the state charges. We wouldn't deal with the federal charges anyway. And I don't see on your Ames information any detainers or anything, so I'm assuming that was all expired at this time. So during this investigation by ATF, you had a problem with an individual and you had some co-conspirators, took him out in a remote area, shot him three times apparently, and left him in an irrigation ditch. You, after the fact, you sold the murder weapon to federal investigators and different people doing investigating for other things besides the murder, and there were co-conspirators while they were being investigated. They put forth information, and subsequently you were arrested and charged on the murder charge. And I think you're convicted by a jury, and your sentence began on August 1st of 1993. So does that sound fair to act up to that point, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It seemed that, that you had a short criminal history, started in 1991, including auto theft, escape, and some traffic violations. We have a moderate to fairly extensive discipline with 9 violations in the last 5 years, with only one of the major. We had 3 tickets in 2017 for violating department rules, threatening, and disrupting. We have good programming, including community college courses. I didn't find any support letters in the packet, but you have supporters in the room today, so you've got the good support there. Your release plan is to go to Step House, Halfway House, but there's no letters confirming that you've been accepted or anything about that in the release plan.
They sent them over here. I received them over here, sir.
Okay. Well, yeah, they're not in, like I said, they're not in the packet right now. But usually when an inmate has a specific halfway house that they're talking about, they've gone through at least the initial process of getting accepted. And, of course, I know the halfway houses, too, will say, we'll send you letters and we'll accept you. And they've got a few stipulations about, you know, release and stuff, you know, when they're going to be released and everything, because they understand, too, that you're going into a parole hearing and not knowing exactly when you're going to be released, so...
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we can... If they send them to you, you need to forward a copy to the board to put in your packet. It says that you will be able to work at your sister's business, at least until you got on your feet and can come up with something... different if you so desire, and you said you'll obtain counseling through the Step House, and that's very commendable too, because a lot of inmates, when they're getting ready to try to get back in the community, say they don't think they need any counseling, but if you've been incarcerated for 20, 25, 30 years, it's a totally different world out there. And it does take some help to successfully return. We'll say that we, from the information I have, it doesn't look like we have any victim statements or anything that are going to go on there, but we have a letter from the Pima County Attorney's Office opposing any sort of release, and it was dated July 9th, 2018. So I believe that's a good summary, and if everything so far sounds correct, then we're going to move on. Does it sound okay up to that point, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so now this is your hearing. It's your first hearing, so you've never been on the board before. We'd like to get to know the inmates so that we can better make a decision. I can read this packet all day long and make up my mind what's going on there, but until we talk to you, we really don't know what you've done or been successful with or failed with or anything else while you've been incarcerated. So at this time, I'd like you to kind of, you know, give us a little idea what was going on back in those days. You don't have to get too specific in your details, but you know, what was going on and kind of what led up to you committing this crime. And then from there, we're going to ask you to kind of tell us what you've done since you were incarcerated to make yourself, you know, a better person and a good candidate to be returned to the community. Okay?
Yes, sir. Well, back then, I made a lot of bad choices in that, and I was young and dumb and always drinking and doing drugs, and when an individual is indulging in that type of behavior, and your thinking ain't clear and all that, I take full responsibility, you know, for all my wrongs that I've done and all that, and I really feel bad for the individual's family and for him, you know, the pain that I would cause them to take in his life and that back then. I've grown a lot since then. I've learned a lot, you know. A day don't go by, you know, that I don't think about that time, you know. I wish I could have been able to tell something to that younger man, speaking of me back then, you know, to make a different decision and all that. Unfortunately, I can't change the past and what happened, you know. There's just so many things, you know, so many bad choices that I made in the past, and now I just try to better myself and do the best I can, you know, through my family, with them helping me, supporting me, through all the programming I've been doing in here. You know, I took a lot of anger management classes, NA classes, AA classes, parenting classes, whatever ADOC has allowed me to partake of. I've tried to take all of them to better myself and all that, you know. We all make mistakes in lives. Back then, I made a really bad choice, and I wish I could change it, but I know I can't, you know. But I just try to do the best I can, you know, each day, you know, and try to keep God first and, you know, make each day the best that it can be.
Okay.
You know.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. First of all, when this, you know, the victim, was the intent to just rob him, or did he do something wrong in a drug deal, or why would you want to kill him anyway?
Well, we were taking him back to Tucson to put him on a bus for him to go back to Phoenix. And they stopped so I could urinate, and when I was getting back in, prior to getting back in the car, him and the driver were arguing. And I guess he got upset about the person telling him that he was going to charge him $120, $130 if he drove back from Tucson to Phoenix. I guess, from what I understood at that time back then, that was standard taxi cab fare from Tucson to Phoenix. And he got upset, pulled the gun out and all that, and everything just happened.
Okay, so he pulled the gun out first?
Yes.
Okay, but there was something in the indications that he might have had $4,200 with him before, you know, when he started that trip?
I have no idea.
Okay.
That's the first that I've heard of that.
Okay, well, so were you involved with gangs back then?
No, sir.
Well, what would prompt you to make and sell explosive devices?
I just talked to the wrong person, I guess. You know, I was doing some county time up in Miami Globe. And the person started talking to me and that, and I said it was quick, easy money, and that, just take them from one place to the other, drop them off, and then everything just kind of snowballed and went bad.
Okay, so you weren't making the devices?
No, sir.
Okay, and yeah, there were quite a few bad choices, I would say. So, in 2017, this last year, I think it was May, you were having some problems with your behavior there. I looked at it, and you know, in January you had a violation of rules, and it was minimum, but what it was is you were dressed inappropriately, you were dressed wrong. And that's what basically what the report from the DOC staff says. And so So you weren't that strong?
No, what had happened, I injured my left knee playing basketball the day before. And they took me up to medical that night. I was on crutches and that. I ended up going out to the hospital 8 days later. I couldn't get no pants on. I was in sweats. I couldn't get no pants on and my left shoe on because my leg was all swollen up and bruised from my lower butt cheek all the way going into my foot. And I went over to medical that morning. They helped me over there on crutches. When I was leaving, the officer had told me that I was going to be placed on report for being out of compliance. And she joked around with us a lot, so I didn't take it serious. And the next day, they called me up, and that's when they told me that I was placed on report for being out of compliance.
And even though it was because of the medical situation that you had no control in?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So then in February, about a month later, there was you got upset on something, and you made statements to the staff that you're going to rally the yard, and you're making a lot of, making a lot of noise about stirring up trouble in the yard. I know it was an informal solution, so they decided it wasn't all that bad, but why would you do that? Why would you make those kind of threatening statements to staff?
I didn't make no threatening statements to the staff. What occurred was my ID got lost, and I told them I was going to go get people to help me find my ID because I was on crutches. This was right after I injured my leg and all that. And I had them call up to the front that my ID was lost because it was getting close to count time. And I was asking them if they could make a copy of it. That ticket, Deputy Ward Hill ended up throwing out after everything was said and done and they found out exactly what happened. She dismissed that ticket. But I never threatened nobody or staff or anybody. That's why I ended up getting dismissed after everybody found out what was going on.
Well, according to Ames and the DOC records, it wasn't dismissed. It was just an informal resolution, which is a little bit different than being dismissed. The indication was that you were mad about it. They wanted you to come up front. You refused to do it because you didn't have your ID, but they told you to, come up for count or something, and you refused to do it. And when they sent the staff to go get you, then you started talking about you were going to rally the yard and making statements that basically they felt you were threatening to start a problem within the inmate population within your yard. And I see, I know that in the form of resolution means they decided it wasn't as serious as the original allegation, but it's not dismissed. And even if it was dismissed, doesn't necessarily mean it didn't happen. It just means that they didn't pursue it. Okay, so then in May, as you're getting closer to your parole eligibility date, they saw you duck into a run that you weren't supposed to be in. So you were out of place. If you went into the yard or the area that you're not supposed to be in, and they went in there and took you back out of it, you did it, and it was you were found guilty of it. So what was going on then?
No, I had just walked into a run. I had asked the officer if I was allowed to go in there, if he was let me go in to talk to a person I was going to school with. And when I was coming back out, he told me I was on report. And I told him, I was my bad. I apologize for going in without saying anything to you. So I accepted that, for going into that run without permission.
Okay, but after 25 years in prison, you didn't understand you weren't supposed to be there?
Well, some of the officers let us just walk in, and some of them, you have to ask permission and that if you can go in or not. And it's, I should have asked them. I was wrong for not asking them before I went in,
Okay. I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions at the time. Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Padilla, I'm curious about some notes that I see in the Ames report that we received, and it concerns activity. It appears that you may have been selling drugs since you've been in prison. There's a notation in October of 2012 that says you state you had sold 2 grams of heroin to another inmate for $400, and that that person had failed to pay, and you're being told you need to pay. There's another notation in 2013 that you had refused to house at Virgie because you had been holding some drugs and lost them. Maybe it's that same incident. And that you'd been threatened then by an inmate. Were you involved in selling drugs in the prison?
No, ma'am, I wasn't. They assumed and thought that I wasn't out, because after they moved me out and out, and I seen the captain and all that, they did the whole one out. They ended up taking all them tickets away and out.
So you didn't sell 2 grams of heroin to another inmate for $400?
No, ma'am.
Okay, well, that shows in your record, just so you know, that it appears that you were selling drugs in prison. There's a couple of refusing to UA. Did you use drugs in prison?
Yes, ma'am, I did before in the past.
Okay, what drugs were you using?
I was smoking weed.
Okay, marijuana, anything else?
I tried heroin a few times, but I mainly just smoked weed.
Okay, in my prison?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Sir, I'm just a little bit concerned about your previous activities. It looks like that you, along with a co-defendant, were selling guns and bombs to ATF, is that right?
Yes, sir. We sold some explosives, I guess, to ATF agents in the past.
And so how are you guys coming across these explosives?
Somebody made them and just passed them on to me. I was just a delivery person to deliver them and drop them off and take up the money.
Okay. There was an incident last year that you were involved with in prison that was threatening. What was that about?
Well, last year, that's what Mr. Neal was speaking of when on the ticket, when my leg was messed up, when they said that supposedly I made a threat or assumption that I was going to rally the whole yard together and all that, which they misunderstood. I was trying to get people together to help me to go find my ID because I was on crutches with the leg brace and all that at the time because I injured my left knee. And somebody overheard and twisted it around and supposedly said that I was trying to rally the whole yard together to go against him. It didn't make no sense because I've always worked up front, you know, around all the officers and that. I've always been staff shoe shining that. I'm all up in administration and, you know, they know how I am, how I act and that. I've never disrespected any of them.
So when you say they just made an allegation that you were trying to rally up the yard to go against them, who is the them?
I guess the officers. I'm not sure because there was a lot of confusion when all that occurred and I didn't even know a lot what was said in that until after the fact. But the only thing I was doing was trying to get people together to help me find my ID.
And
somebody misconstrued, I guess, and thought that I was trying to go against the officers. An officer overheard me talking with other inmates trying to help me. Because I was upset about my ID being missing, because it was in my locker.
So when did that happen to your ID, or did you find it?
It was found later on. Somebody accidentally picked it up, and they thought it was theirs, and one of the other inmates had seen what had happened and went to another building after everything was said and done and went and got it and brought it back.
I
Great, you have any questions?
Yes, sir. Back to the original offense, sir. Seems that once this murder had taken place, that the body was left out in a canal near a cotton field. Why did y'all leave the body out there? What was going on there, sir?
That's where everything occurred at. That's where the incident had happened, and happened. I just left it lay right there. I wasn't going to move anything or try to tamper with anything.
So what were y'all doing out there? That's why you were selling these weapons and drugs and so forth? That's why you were out there near the canal, sir?
No, sir. We were on our way over to Tucson to take him to put him on a bus back to Phoenix. That's where we stopped. I had to urinate, and we stopped right there. That's when they started arguing and that about a price and being taken back to Phoenix when I was getting back into the vehicle.
This next question, you don't have to answer it unless you want to, but what eventually happened as related to the ATF? Was any of you charged with that, or they just dropped everything at the federal level, sir?
I got 53 months for it that I've already served for transportation, sales of firearms, and explosives.
But as far as you know, there is not a detainer or nothing of that nature as of this moment. That's the end of that.
No, sir. My detainer's already been taken off.
Okay. Well, we're glad to know that. They also stated that you left the state after this murder was committed. Where did you go, sir?
I went to go see my wife and kids up in New Mexico now, because I knew that I was going to end up having to pay for this and have to come deal with it and face, you know, the consequences of what I did.
So the ATF agents, they found you there with your wife and kids there in New Mexico.
They flew out there and picked me up at the airport and flew me back to Tucson. Okay. And that's when, upon arriving in Tucson, I didn't know they were ATF until I got arrested there.
Okay, sir. Let me just jump forward to more current. Why did you, or your family, whomever, why did you select the step house, halfway house, where you would want to reside if this board saw fit to release you, sir? Why that facility, sir?
The program, they have a program. I was talking with Lewis Crane. He's the manager over there. And they have a 90-day program that seems real well. That would help me reintegrate back into society.
And then you plan to work at your sister's business. She could tell us, or someone else, but what kind of business is your sister involved in, sir?
She has Sightline Professionals there in Mesa.
And what would you be doing, sir?
I'm not really positive. You would have to ask her. I believe she's there.
Yes, sir. Okay. I just wanted to ask you. I guess my final question would be, Mr. Neal has indicated earlier, one of the things that we're trying to do, and that is to really get to know you, because this is our first time speaking with you. So, in your own words, how have you changed since this offense was committed, sir? I'm assuming that you're a changed person. I'm assuming that you're not the same person that you were back in 1993. So, how have you changed, sir?
I've grown and I've learned to accept, you know, my mistakes and to learn from them to do better. Now I've been educating myself and trying to do all the programming that I can to learn as much as I can about myself and others around me to be a better person and to respect everyone for who they are. Before, back in the past, I was young and dumb and hard-headed, you know, and I didn't see each individual for who they were, you know. Each one of us are different, and I always assumed everybody should be the same, and that's not so. But I just try to do the best I can each day you know, and continue my schooling, my education, that's the most important thing. I'll be finishing my second AS degree within 3 months over here at Three Eastern Arizona College, and when I do get out and get a chance to be out there, I want to go for the bachelor's degree in small business management as well.
I commend you for that. I guess my final question would be, you say that you're improving yourself and that you are a different person than I am. I like to believe that you are a different person, but this is a follow-up to what you said in reference to the question that was raised by Honorable Mr. Johnson a few moments ago. And I know that these are minors, but how, you know, as close as you were, you know, coming before this board in 2017, why would you even get involved with anything that would maybe jeopardize you with these were minor tickets? There are no major tickets at this time. But why would you get involved in anything? It seemed to me that if I was that close to coming before this board or any group, that I would try to do my best behavior. So why what happened, sir?
Well, with the first ticket, like I said, that was out of my control. You know, I was injured at the time and I couldn't get no pants on. And everybody, all the officers, even my lieutenant, even told me that I shouldn't have been roping up for that because everybody knew the extent of my injury and what occurred and all that. You know, the second one with my ID, even though it wasn't my fault that it got lost or somebody took it playing around, whatever happened, I took responsibility for that. That's my fault. You know, that's part of my property. I should have been more aware of where it was at or just kept it on me at all times, and that would have eliminated that situation. This was the third time when I walked in a run without asking the officer. You know, I should have asked him. You know, I shouldn't have been disrespectful in that matter to him, but I was just concerned about going in and talking with my friend about some classes we were working on at the EAC lab. And you know, that was my mistake. I take full responsibility for that. I should have stopped and asked the officer and explained the situation, because I know he would have let me go in there and talk to the individual without a problem.
But go ahead, sir.
You know, I wasn't planning or trying, you know, to for any of that to occur, but you know, it did. And, you know, I'm sorry that it did, and I've been trying to do the best I can now, you know, since all that happened. You know, I'm not perfect, and I accept full responsibility for those actions, you know, just as I have from the beginning.
Okay, well, I appreciate you taking full responsibility. That is very important. No question about it. My final question about this ATF, now you, how long have you been in that business, sir, selling guns and ammunition or whatever you were selling? How long have you been doing that, sir?
That was just not even a month. I wasn't even involved in that like a month, 2 months maybe, if even that.
So this was something new for you?
Somebody just pulled me into it.
But why would you get involved in that? Was just to make money, or how did you get involved in such business?
To make money. It was just all about the money, about making money. I was irresponsible, wasn't thinking how I should have been thinking, you know.
And about how old were you at that time, sir?
Pardon me?
How old were you when this offense took place, sir?
28 years old.
So you were not a kid at that time, you were a young man. Yes, sir. Okay, well, thank you so very much, Mr. Padilla. Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Neal.
Mr. Neal.
You're very welcome.
Can I ask one more? Sorry, Mr. Neal, I thought of something else. Mr. Padilla, I noticed that you had probation, it looked like in 1991. Were you still on that probation at the time of this incident?
No, ma'am.
So you had completed, you got probation, jail, and a fine for an escape third degree. So you had concluded that probation? completed it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Neal.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, no questions from the board at this time. I think at this point in time, sir, I'm going to ask your supporters if they would like to come in front of the board and speak on your behalf, and then once we've done that, I'll get back with you, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'll leave it up to you all as to how many and which order you would like to speak, okay?
Good morning. Thank you for hearing me. My name is Barry Temple. I am Antoinette Padilla Temple's husband and Eric's brother-in-law. I wanted to state I own Arizona Service and Installation, and my wife owns some out-of-state businesses. We do arena seating, we're doing PIR and Sun Devil Stadium and that kind of stuff. And here in the state, my wife's businesses are located out-of-state. Therefore, he would not be eligible to work out-of-state. She's licensed in Nevada, California, and Washington. I just wanted to say I'm here basically first to support my wife because she believes in Eric, and I've known Eric since he was 16 years old, and I'm here to basically, should you find him eligible to release him, I would find any opportunity I could to have him work in safe environments within our business structure, and I'm a tough boss. I always say I got a right foot. We try to service Arizona schools and our customers appropriately. And I'm actually the sales manager and the business manager, product manager for Sideline Professionals, which is my wife's business. So I thank you for your time.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm Antoinette Temple, Eric's sister. We're just a year apart, so I grew up among 10 kids. We were the end two. I just wanted to let you know I was here for him and just support him. And I feel like he's done good to better himself, or I probably wouldn't be here. But I do have a business, my husband does too, and I wanted to let you know that I did talk to Lewis at Reborn Assistant Association, and I sent the deposit for the 2 months to him for, because I wanted him to go to a place where he could still get help, because yeah, he has been there for 25 years, and I visit him, I talk to him on the phone, but I know that it's still a transition. And I think instead of him just coming to one of our homes, that it would be a good program for him to be in. And then after that, we'll get him to work. And I just want him to be able to be with his kids and grandchildren. And I know he was a mess back in the day and did some terrible things, and I feel bad for that. And it took me a while to get over it. But I forgive them, and I just wanted to be here and support him. Thank you.
Any questions for the board? Thank you, ma'am.
Hello. I'm Tiffany Padilla, his niece. I'll try to hold this together and make it quick. So you said that you would like to get to know who my uncle is. He actually helped save my life. 1 year into his incarceration, my father had passed of a drug overdose. I have wrote this man and talked this man for the whole 25 years he's been incarcerated. He has helped and guided me to make me realize that we all do make choices in life. When I was younger, my dad was on, I was on 15 when my dad had passed. And I got involved in the gangs, selling drugs, you name it. My juvenile record is longer than this desk. With that being said, with his guidance, I realized it's all about choices in life. Now I work for the biggest airline in the world, and I'm a supervisor there. I turned my life completely around. Now I'm going up to become a Phoenix Police Department, police officer of the Phoenix PD. I just had to pass a couple of things. But with that being said, I just wanted you to know who he's meant for me. And I would like to do the same when he gets out, to be that support. So if a man in prison can help somebody on the outside, knowing what he did, I think that says a lot. That's all I have.
Thank you. Is anyone else in support of Mr. Padilla at this time? Is there anything from the victim's assistance for this one?
No.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Padilla.
Yes, sir.
We are nearing the end of your hearing at this time. Before the board goes into discussion to make a decision, we would like you to, if you so wish, to make a final statement. Tell us any other information you think might be relevant to our decision. We just ask you don't repeat all the information we've already covered, okay?
Yes, sir. Well, upon my release, I just want to try to be a better person, and one of my main goals is to try to get out and help mentor the youth and teach them, you know, about the wrong and the misleading ways that gangs and drugs takes an individual alone. Even if I could save a couple of youths, you know, it'd be a great thing. I'd also like to be there to help the veterans, you know, because they've done so much for this country. So many people forget about them, you know, all that they've done. And I'd like to be able to do charity work or whatever for the youth and veterans alone. You know, other than that, I just want to try to be a better person. You know, get that chance to show people that I've changed and I can be a good member of society now, you know, after learning and trying to do all the things that I've done in a good way. You know, I have the support of my family and friends, and I know they'll be there for me in times of need. That's really all I can say, you know. I ain't trying to be here to lie to anybody or give them false hope or anything. You know, I'm far from perfect, and I want to try to be the best I can, you know, for my kids and grandkids upon release when I do get released. I thank you for your time, though, all of you, and I appreciate the time you took out today.
Okay, thank you, sir. The board will be going into discussion to make a determination. We'll be talking amongst ourselves, discussing the case. You may think that we're addressing you, but we won't be. But we ask that you stay on the phone, just remain silent. You can hear the whole conversation and everything we do. Once we've made a decision, I'll get back with you and we'll go from there, okay?
All right, thank you, sir.
Okay, the board is now in discussion. This is truly an unfortunate situation. Did some pretty bad stuff back in the day. Since he's been incarcerated, he seems to have done fairly well, but I'm a little troubled with the free tickets last year. And it just seems that he gets upset over these situations and nearing, you know, maybe nearing his parole eligibility and, I don't know, all the nervous and stuff to do this stuff, but it seems like he's still got a little bit of problem conforming to strict rules, and the issue I have is that if this board was so inclined as to vote for a release, it would most likely be home arrest, and the rules are very, very, very strict under home arrest, very strict, and I think that at this time, Mr. Padilla would actually have some issues being able to follow the very strict rules. And the other thing, too, is that I'm not sure whether Step House would accept him as a home arrest offender, or whether he would have to spend some time, say, with his sister or that, during, you know, during his home arrest time. But anyway, the three tickets last year was the biggest issue for me, and I mean, I'm a vendor, but still, there's very strict rules. If you're going to bend the rules or meet the bend rules, you need to bend them after you've gotten permission, not before you get permission. So at this point in time, I'm not in favor of granting home arrest or parole or absolute discharge. I'm going to listen to discussion from the rest of my board members. Ms. Woodhouse.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Neal. I have a different take on the discipline. And I've worked in prisons, and I know that sometimes people get written up for things that the officer writing it up even later says, I think I was being a little overly picky. I believe his story, that he couldn't get pants on, and rather than walk with around with no pants, that he put his sweats on. I believe that. I mean, that officer should have been able to look at his leg and go, well, I can see that he can't get pants on, but, you know, and they can make exceptions, but whatever officer it was decided to write him up. I also believe his story about, you know, marching a bunch of inmates to go walk around the yard and look for his ID because he had lost it. I believe that. That's something that could happen. As far as the disrupting count, he went into a housing unit he wasn't supposed to be in, and he said himself, and I believe that, some officers enforce that you can walk right in and others don't, and it's an inconsistency, and I don't agree with it, but that's how it is. And so he wound up getting written up. Now, I'm not saying that you know, we should be totally excused from, you know, from those. But I would just ask on part of the board to have a little bit of understanding on those. The other thing is, I believe his sister reported that she had made a deposit at Reborn. So I think that he would be okay being on home arrest at Reborn. I think they do allow home arrest. I also appreciated very much his the story that his niece told about how he was able to help straighten her out. And one of the last things he said to us was that he himself wants to mentor other youth. If he had this much success with his niece, he may be able to have some success with other people. So I guess I just have a little bit different take on it than you did, Mr. Neal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Ms. Johnson?
Well, I don't agree with you, Mr. Neal. I kind of think that that one ticket, the threatening, that was the only one that I was concerned about, but rallying people together to go look for his ID, I just don't know how real that would be, but Ms. Rittenhouse, you certainly have experience inside the institution, so I'm going to go with you that could be the true statement, that he was actually trying to get people to go out and look for and actually look for his ID. Out there. I know that he does have a community support. My other issue is that I did just have some concern about his involvement in selling these explosives to undercover law enforcement officers and how he became involved. And in fact, that bothers me that he was selling explosives, but he does have an extensive, what would probably be probably be two pages maybe of disciplines that he actually has since he's been incarcerated, and it seems like he's got tickets in 15, 16, and 17. However, I'm going to say that for me, just based on it, because I know you have more experience in the institution, the idea that I was concerned about the grabbing people up to go look for ID, it seemed like it would be a reality to me. But if you say that it is, I certainly will rely on your experience in that particular situation. So he has the family support here, and his sister, and the brother-in-law who are going to help him out, I'm assuming the financial assistance to assist him once he gets out. So I would think I would be open maybe for home arrest.
Well, John, most of all, I think that one has to look at, as one board member, we have to look at the total picture. I'm not just looking at the three tickets that he received in 2017, but as we know, this is his first time coming before this board, and I really think that I am getting to know him. I don't think that I fully understand him yet. I know that he was, 27 or whatever he told me, years of age, but for him to get involved in selling the weapons, period, but to ATF agents, that concerns me, and I know that he wanted to go and say goodbye to his family, but he left the state of Arizona to go to New Mexico, which was not that far apart, but he did leave. Go over, and I would just like to get to know him just a little better, Mr. Leo. That's all that I'm going to say at this time, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, sir. I just want to clarify my thoughts about the three issues, because apparently I didn't state it quite right. I don't have an issue that different officers look at things differently. My issue is that they were involved in a fraction that he knew something about, and I would say his behavior based on the report on the ID was that he was at least confrontational with it. And when he was injured, that same sort of thing, there must be something to it, or it had been dismissed. That's my thought on that, when it comes down. And part about going in the wrong way, my point there is he stated more than once that some officers say okay, some say you have to check in first, he knew that, and he didn't verify that before he went in. If he's on home arrest and his itinerary says this and he doesn't want to do it, is he going to be likely to follow that or not? So, but I do understand the fact that the point of view of a video camera or an officer standing seeing something going on catches that corner of his eye rather than sees the whole package, can be different than originally stated, but based on the outcome of each one of them, to me it's just showing that he's not really clearly thinking out his actions before he takes them, when there's something that's an issue. So, but anyway, any other comments from the board at this time? Okay, based on all the information that I've received and Mr. Padilla's testimony and the information from his supporters, at this time I am going to move to deny Mr. Padilla home arrest, medical, or absolute discharge. And because of the date of the crime, it will be a 1-year set off, and that is my motion.
I would second your motion, but I would ask you to consider withdrawing the 1-year set off, because I think we just really need to get to know him better.
Okay, I can agree with that. So then I'll amend the motion to, it would be to deny whether full active discharge or home arrest this time, and it would be approximately 6 months would be another hearing for Mr. Padilla.
I would second that.
And I'll agree.
I agree too. Okay. So if you come back, it's hopefully not have no more tickets.
Okay. Motion by myself, second by Dr. Wright, amended by Mr. Johnson, agreed by Ms. Wright. And the reasons would be that it was a serious and violent offense and loss of human life, trauma to the victim. I won't put victim harassment because I don't know what would have gone on, whether it was kind of a struggle on the thing. Prior criminal history, recent disciplinary infractions. A very good program, so I'm not going to put that down. I'm only going to mark release plan only because we don't have specific verification in our packet that he's actually accepted there. And unless there's something I'm putting away, if a board member would like to add, that would be it. Okay, Mr. Padilla, the board has voted to deny you referral of home arrest or active discharge at this time. But the Department of Corrections will certify you in approximately 6 months. You can come back in front of us and we'll talk to you again and get to know you a little bit more and see where it goes from there, okay?
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time, all of you.
All right. Thank you for appearing today and thank you for your demeanor today. And thank you for your progress you've made so far. This will end your hearing. And we'll put CO3 back on the phone, please.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'd like to thank Mr. Padilla's supporters for coming today.
Yes, sir. Yeah.